Stop, Dave. I'm a
friend. Again, it's another Friday night. It's 7:01 p.m. Missouri time. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. We'll be joined tonight by Mike Moon. We'll have a quick recap of the legislative session to date. There's 1 week left. 1 week left is all. And things are starting to come to their usual hectic end. Bills that were introduced in the first or second week of the legislation are being jammed together now in large, monolithic omnibus bills with numerous amendments attached. The way things happen. Budgets have been passed now, and one veto has been overridden already. There will be other vetoes, which probably will have to wait for the veto session. And we will spend some time tonight talking about the most important piece of legislation introduced this session, H.R. 476, and its demise. Is that you, Mike?
It is. Hello, Dad.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Really well, thanks. How about you?
Well, I'm incensed. things are getting a little hectic up there, aren't they?
To say the least.
This is you're a little bit more ready for it this year than you were last, though.
Well, probably so. I guess I learned some valuable lessons last time, and it was an immersion by fire.
Yeah,
I felt that sometimes I was drowning, but this has made it a little bit better to be able to at least have some understanding of the bills that are being brought to the floor.
Right,
it's difficult to know all of them. The ones you have with your committee, you're a little bit more able to keep up with, but there's lots that I'm seeing for the first time still.
And which committee or committees do you sit on, remind the listeners?
Well, the Ways and Means
Okay.
is one, and that's an interesting one. And then we have education, both elementary and secondary, and also higher education on the Ag Appropriations Committee. And let's see. Which others am I trying to filter through those? there are about six total, and right offhand, I'm forgetting. So forgive me.
That's all right. Please, I spring these questions for listeners. When Mike and I talk, it's just two friends talking over the table here, where there's no script. So sometimes I certainly don't ever intend for it to sound like I'm putting you on the spot. We just spring these questions on you as they come up, as though we were having a casual conversation, which usually is the case. So,
yeah.
So this isn't Meet the Press or anything where Mike and I sat down and said, okay, we're going to say this now, and then we're going to say that. Tell the listeners and me, because some of us aren't exactly sure. How much time, comparatively, do you spend on the chamber floor as opposed to in these committee meetings?
Well, it depends on the time of year. Early on, we might be in a chamber for 30 minutes or an hour, and then we'll be adjourned and go to the committee meetings. And the committee meetings, for example, one meeting we had in the Education Committee on Common Core lasted 6 hours. And not all of them are that intense or that long. Sometimes they'll last an hour or two, perhaps. But now it's just the opposite. We had one committee meeting this week, and it lasted about an hour and a half or so. And on Monday, we gaveled in at 3 o'clock. As I recall, I think we were there till about 6 or 7. I don't recall exactly. Then the following days, we started at 10 a.m., except on Thursday. And those days last until about 6 or 7. Thursday was 9 a.m. to about 3 or 3:30. And so now they're getting longer. Now, this coming week, though, because of all the different bills you alluded to a few minutes ago that are being tacked on, they're going to have opportunities to be added as amendments to some of these bills. And I would imagine that Monday through Thursday we'll probably be there till 8 or 9 or maybe later. And then on Friday, we'll have our only mandated Friday session. It should start about 10 a.m., and we're mandated to adjourn at 6. So we'll go right up to 6 o'clock. And as I remember last year, it, you know, for some reason they just continue on right up to that. And I just wondered last year, and I know it's going to be this way too, where why did they not use some of those gaps in the day and discuss some of these things, put them on the floor, and decide whether they were good or not? And my opinion is that these bills can't stand by themselves. They ought not be tacked onto another bill. Some of them are okay, grant you, but the majority of them, they're on there because they can't make it on their own. And you'll find that some of these amendments, which were bills at one time by themselves,
right,
will be on a half a dozen different bills.
Yes.
And so people are, I'd say, desperate to get their legislation so they can say they had something passed.
The Mike, and I know you're not, I'll remind the listeners for you, you're not a career politician. You started your time in Jefferson City midterm last term and have done just this one full term. But has anyone ever stood up in the House floor and said, hey, you know, we're only allowed to have one item per bill. You know, we're only allowed to have one subject in a bill.
Yeah.
Or do they waive that rule? Or, I mean, that's not like a House rule. That's like a constitutional stipulation.
Yes, if you look back at the Hammersmith ruling years ago, I don't remember the year, that's where there was an argument that some of these bills had more than one subject.
Right.
And so you'll have sometimes people stand up and yell off Hammersmith. In fact, that's kind of interesting you mentioned that, or we got to that subject, because that's named after a guy named Bob Hammersmith, who is the regional president of Commerce Bank. I've known him for probably 15 years or so, and I thought it was a joke at first, but it's true. That suit is named after him, and there have been, mostly though, the ones who raise the subject are Democrats, because unfortunately, as much as you'd want to think it'd be different, the Republicans will do all they can to get a bill passed, and even if it changes the title, which is okay, you can change the title one time. The second time, though, it nullifies the bill, and if they think it is close enough, and even though it might be challenged later for germaneness, they'll go ahead and add it on there sometimes. And that's unfortunate, because it'd be better to have one bill. And that's why I'm saying things get so frenzied at the last week, that why can we not be doing this during the regular session? Have
exactly.
Have bills passed earlier.
Yeah,
and if
I've been
stand the test, and good. If they don't, good.
Some time ago, washed my hands of any politics on the federal level or any involvement in that, and started concentrating myself on what can we do to make Missouri more sovereign, what can we do to fix our government so that we can move forward from there, maybe join with some other states that will come along, and we'll talk about that in 1 minute. And since that time, and it's only been about 3 years, I've been absolutely amazed by the number of things that can be thrown into one bill at the end of the session.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, really, because I don't think we have to do that. And know that you probably heard the saying, whenever the legislature is not in session, they can do no harm. And
right.
It's kind of funny, but it's the truth. And
yeah.
As much as people have good intent, their intentions, however good they may be, aren't always the best thing to do.
And also amazed at the number of bills that, like you've already alluded to, are introduced in the first or second week. That, like you say, I mean, you go through a day and you have a recess here and a recess there and a couple of hours here and a couple of hours there, and even days here and days there. And then all of a sudden, these bills that were introduced back in January are just appearing out of nowhere, and you've had an entire session to talk about those things.
Right. Now, I didn't verify this, so this is hearsay, I guess, but we adjourned early on Wednesday. It was about 2:30,
right.
Maybe 3 o'clock, and I heard someone say it was because of a golf tournament.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just silly. We're there
yeah.
to do a job. And
absolutely.
And I do agree that as long as we're not passing legislation, we're doing no harm. But if you've got serious matters that need to be discussed, then that's what we're there for. It's not a playtime.
Okay, we're going to move right along into the first item of discussion tonight, a bill that was introduced in the first days of the session. That finally, about a month ago, found its way to a committee, and finally, about 2 weeks ago, found its way to a hearing, and stands in my mind still as the most important piece of legislation in this legislative session, H.R. 476. Mike, I'm heartbroken about this. Give me some kind of a recap of what we're looking at.
Well, I guess we should just begin at the beginning.
Yeah.
When this all really starts with my involvement with my election. And back in December of 2012, the representative of the 157th, Don Ruziska, was appointed to the Probation and Parole Board by Governor Jay Nixon. And I believe this was intentional to reduce the supermajority. He was number 110, and with his leaving the House, we went down to 109, which is still a supermajority. But with that vacancy, the governor, by statute, is required to issue a writ of election. And he took about 3.5 to 4 weeks to do so. And some would say, well, you know, that's kind of a long time. But when you look at the next regularly scheduled election, I think he was in his constitutional bounds in taking that time. And in fact, it does take time to have central committees within the counties to organize themselves with a legislative committee and then choose a nominee
right.
as their candidate. And so that month to some may seem long, but I think, again, that's within his limits there. When you fast forward then to June of 2013, Jason Smith used to be the pro tem in the House.
Mm-hmm.
He swore an oath as a U.S. Congressman in the 8th Congressional District, replacing Joanne Emerson. His seat is yet to be filled. In fact,
right.
there was not an election called for, I think, 4 different regular election cycles, and if you look at all the different possibilities, there are about 6, maybe even 7 different dates that could have been used as a special election. And so when you consider the time lapse and when his vacancy occurred, and then when the election, which has now been called August 5th, is 430 days. And then the Secretary of State will still have another 30 days, which he can use to certify the results before the candidate is allowed to be seated. So the entire general session, regular session of the General Assembly, will have ended because it ends this Friday. The office holder who wins that race will perhaps be able to attend and be a part of the veto session in September. But when you look at you can call it damage, I guess, but some may not see it as real damage. When you look at the consequences of the vacancies in those three House seats, and first is Jason Smith, and we have the 67th legislative district is also vacant, and then the 151st is also vacant. All those people who are affected in those areas, about 285,000 people, have had no voice in the legislative process. And I've asked some of my representative friends who are not willing to take a stand to call the governor on this. How about these folks? If I had the opportunity, and I told them this just this last week, if I had the opportunity to debate 476 on the floor, the first inquiry I would make is of the 67th legislative district.
Yes.
There'd be no answer.
Yeah.
And the second would be, let me talk to the 120th. There'd be no answer. And then the 151st. There'd be no answer. And still, that doesn't drive the point home to them that they're not represented.
Right.
And I'm getting off track just a little bit here, but I've got to make it because I've got to make this point because it's on my mind right now. And asking some of these folks to sign a petition, I'll explain more about that in just a few minutes.
Yes.
The response I'm getting from several is, you know, I've got a primary opponent. And I said, well, so do I. What does that matter? I had one fellow even tell me that by signing the petition, it might affect a future job. Now, how lame is that? It just makes me sick when I think about
what
these guys are thinking. Well, let me step back just a little bit because we have had a hearing that started about 3 weeks ago. And I believe now, and looking back at it, the timing of the hearing was done purposely so that there would be a short window of time allowed and available to hear the articles. We had one, Nick Marshall's articles were completed, and then the hearing was delayed a week, and then we had Representative Rick Bratton, and my articles were heard and completed as well. And then time started, water going under the bridge without any response from the committee. And I should point out, too, that the night the committee, the night of the day that the committee completed the hearings, I went around and whipped the committee to find out exactly where we stood.
Uh-huh.
Had Chairman Stan Cox voted due pass, which is typically the case in most of these bills, we would have had a majority, and we would have been able to vote that out of committee. Well, when I presented my findings to Chairman Cox, he said, well, that's not what I've got. I said, you're wrong. And I said, well, and what I'd like to do is have a vote of the committee because someone's not telling me the truth, and I want to know who it is. And he dismissed it.
Right.
And so more time passed, and the following day, I guess it was Thursday, a week ago, I talked with him again, and he wasn't willing to take a vote. And so then I was pretty upset on Thursday. You probably wouldn't want to be around me very, very much. And I don't get depressed much at all, but I think I was depressed that day. On the way home, I was kind of seething as I was contemplating what had been done and what our next option might be. And I spent the weekend with the family, and it was a good time. And I think I needed that time away from the process, and I was refreshed. I went back on Monday, and I'd really simmered down quite a bit. In fact, I wasn't even thinking about the articles anymore. I thought we had done what we could do, and it was over. I received a text, though, that had the link to an article that Representative Cox was quoted in and saying that the impeachment articles will not be passed out of committee. And it went on to say that because of the majority of the committee members, they felt that although there were serious, circumstantial evidence, that they would not pass them on to the full floor, full House. And I have to tell you, Dave, I then became a little angry.
Me
so I
too.
Rose up out of my chair and I went directly to Representative Cox and I asked him, first I said, you know, I'm extremely disappointed that you would go to the press and reveal your intent on not passing these articles out of committee before you come to me and let me know what you were going to do. And, of course, he has no obligation to me, but I just thought as a courtesy it would have been nice. And, of course, he said, well, you didn't have the votes anyway, and he dismissed it again. So then I talked to some leadership folks, and I'll just tell you the names. I talked to John Deal. I told him that we had a problem, and the problem is that we lack communication in the House. We need to have respect for one another if we're going to work together. And he asked me what I wanted. And I said, well, I still want to vote to the committee because someone's not telling me the truth. And if they're coming back and if I get to come back, I need to know who I can trust and who I can work with. So he agreed to work toward that. And meanwhile, I had a talk with some other leadership, and then I decided to go back and re-poll some of the committee members. I didn't poll all of them, but especially the ones that were solid yeses. I asked the question whether or not they were informed of the chairman's decision to not take the vote. Not a single one was informed, and that really got me going.
Right.
And so there are a lot of things that transpired that it'd probably be smart for me not to say, I guess. But I was not a very happy camper. And I went to bed that night thinking that we're done. You know, that was the next night. That was Monday night. And Tuesday morning, you may know Rick Bratton had returned to his home because his brother-in-law died in a traffic accident the Wednesday before. Oh. And he was out the latter part of the week and then Monday. And then on Tuesday, we had the important vote to override the veto.
Right.
I had met with some others about, bringing them up to speed. Rick was one of them, and some leadership came to us while we were meeting and mentioned they had an option for us, which I was pretty tickled about. But in the end, and that option, I should say, was a discharge petition. And so we began getting signatures, and we had a brick wall at about 23. That's where we stand right now. And on Tuesday night, after we'd gotten that 23, I was kind of disappointed. I felt that maybe we had done all we could do. And then I just felt impressed to just take a little look and maybe do some more research. So I found two articles that were pretty telling, indicating, as I mentioned, some of the language about circumstantial evidence of willful misconduct by the governor. And when I looked up willful misconduct, it states that it's something that is kind of premeditated. It's an intentional act. And even though that information was believed by the chairman and perhaps some of the committee members, for them to quash that in committee without bringing it to the full floor, I thought was just ridiculous. And so Rick and Nick and myself had a conference with the chairman, and it turns out that it's political. It's,
right.
It's like some of those other guys who were saying, well, you know, I've got to think about my next job or the next election, and that's exactly what he's doing.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that we have men who are in such powers or positions of authority and looking for other positions like judgeships. Would take that particular tack and decide without consulting their own committee. And they have that prerogative. I know they do. But there's also a rule, I believe it's rule number 34, which gives the House members a prerogative to draft a discharge petition and have this removed moved out of the committee right to the floor. I said, that's what we've done, and we even had people telling us, well, you know what you're doing is not right, because the committee is a checkpoint, and they should have the final authority. Well, then I said, well, why don't we have Rule 34 in the House rules? And there's no response to that. They just think that we ought to let it lie, even though most of the people will say, we think you're doing the right thing, but we're not going to sign on to it. And,
exactly.
You know, that I talked to one representative who was not coming back, and he said, that's exactly why I'm not coming back, because of people's attitude like that. And on one hand, you can't blame them. On the other hand, though, I want to fight it tooth and nail, and I want to see those people not come back, because we need
right.
to replace them with people who have a little backbone, who will stand
right.
up for what's right, even though it's a little tough. And, you know, I admit, this isn't easy for me to do either.
Right.
I don't have anything, a personal vendetta against the governor. I don't know the man, but I do know what he's done and what he hasn't done. And a person in his position of power and authority needs to be held accountable, just like we hold the average Joe accountable for our actions and our misactions.
That's absolutely right, Mike. And I want to back up to something you said. I don't find it right. You were talking to some of the old timers there, and they said, this is what we have committees for. If this is what we have committees for, we need to do away with committees. We have set up a situation where a person can single-handedly, I'm not Stanley Cox's constituent. So why doesn't my representative get a vote? Why doesn't my representative get to weigh in on H.R. 476? Because Stanley Cox says so? It isn't right. I mean, this is a position where when you assume the chairmanship of a committee like this, you at that point work for a lot more than just your constituency. You work for the entire state of Missouri. You work for me when you put yourself in a position where you can sit up there and deny my representative a shot at something like H.R. 476.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the questions that I posed to the others, because I don't know if it's a majority, but it is a significant number of House members who don't understand what the impeachment process is all about.
Right.
They don't understand what the issues are either, the three articles that we brought forward. And this is the place to learn. And we have, session ends sometimes at 6 or 7 o'clock. We have till midnight or early in the morning. We could stay there and listen to it if they so desired.
Yeah.
The desire's not there, though. And so, therefore, I conclude that they don't care. And that may be a little harsh, and it may not be exactly right, but that's just what I'm seeing. If they're not wanting to...
I don't find it a bit harsh, Mike. I mean, it is the message that's being sent. The message that's being sent is disenfranchise 280,000 people. Well, okay, no big deal. You know?
Right. Yeah.
It's... You do whatever you want, to think two things in my mind that just really blow me away. Here we have a governor being told that what he's done is okay. That is the message being sent. That what he has done is going to go without penalty. And this guy has White House aspirations. And then we've got Stanley Cox, who, I mean, would you ever, when you're going to the ballot box, consider a person of that level of integrity for, of all things, a judgeship? Not me. I mean, I'm not going to put you on the spot by asking you to answer that question, but not
I'll
me.
I'll answer that. No, I would not.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. And I just find it, laughable that he would take this action, and you said it perfectly. He wants to be a judge, and why would a judge or someone who wants to be a judge just summarily dismiss something that he has stated that there is finding And it shows just cause for pushing it on or taking it to the full house. I just don't understand it.
I don't either, Mike. But and I don't want to take advantage of your time. I know that you always have to get out of here and go do other things. I've got you and I didn't get to talk offline before this thing started, so I don't know how long you can stay tonight.
Well, I'm here at a track meet in Willard, so I'm standing out kind of in a field.
Oh,
and
okay.
I can see my son, and he will be competing in a long-distance run shortly, and so I'm okay for a little bit if you have the time.
I have all the time. I've got 2 hours, Mike. I want to shoot down the list and then and get some how's it going from you right to work. How's it going?
Well, to be quite honest, it's not. And I said in some meetings last week that excuses were given that we can't take a vote because we don't have the votes yet. Those who are proponents of the right to work think we do. And so then the argument after that's presented is, well, how is this campaign going to be funded? Because, you know, it'll be a ballot initiative. And if it's passed out of the House and the Senate and it's placed on the ballot, there's going to be a tremendous amount of money infused by those who are against right to work. Mm-hmm. And so there needs to be someone on the support side, and I don't know who those are exactly, but I've been told that if it passes the House, that this money will be coming forward. I just have to trust that's true. A lot of the reasoning behind not taking votes, and I understand some of it, is that you don't want to bring something up and have it fail, because then you lose momentum, perhaps, and you may set yourself back a few steps. But one of the pluses that I see is that if 70% of the state truly wants right to work, and that's the way I understand it, then we need to put our names on the line. And the public should have the pleasure of knowing who's for it and who's not, so
absolutely,
that they can then decide who they want representing them the next time around.
Yep.
I just think that's the way it ought to be. And so,
I think,
so there's protect. There's, I'm sorry, there, there's protections in place so that you don't have to take the vote. And there may be something in motion, and I don't know if it'll happen or not, that could force this this right to work vote. We'll see if that plays out, and if it does, maybe we can chat together about it, maybe not online for a while. But anyway, I think that it's a distinct possibility that it could happen. And if it does, or if it does not, you may see some things happening in one chamber or the other that I think you'll have a lot of people applauding.
Okay.
And I'm sorry I'm being kind of talking in the dark there. But
no, that's all right. No.
Can't give you all the details because I'm already in trouble.
No.
I'm sure you don't know what that's about, but anyway, it's kind of funny at the same time, but it's not funny either. But
and like I've said, and I will not apologize to the listeners for never ever going anywhere that will put you on the spot. But something you said there about, you know, in that discussion about the vote thing. I mean, this is what incenses me about 476 and the way it was handled in this committee. I mean, you know, Cox can stand there in front of the press all day and contend that the votes weren't there. When you whipped it was there. People need to know. I mean, I've got Elmer, Cornejo, Haar, Higdon, Lira, Marshall, Richardson out there saying to their constituents, I was for this. Well, who's to say? You know?
Yeah.
Without a vote,
yeah,
who's to say? You know, okay, let's move on. SAPA. SAPA left the Senate and came back to the House with a few changes. How's that going?
The primary change that was made was when the Senate or the House took out a provision that would impugn or charge any federal agent from any prosecution if they violated or tried to enforce a law that would infringe upon the Second Amendment. And the Senate put in a piece that will disallow any federal agent who attempts to enforce a federal law that infringes upon the Second Amendment to hold any law enforcement job in the state of Missouri.
Okay.
Personally, I like that because if you're not going to prosecute them, then don't put them in a law enforcement position because what do you suppose they're going to do? I mean, they're going to enforce any federal provisions that are out there. So
right.
I say that it's probably not the best fix, but it's a fix I think I can live with. And therefore, with Representative Funderburk, I'll be talking to him and asking him to go ahead and keep those changes so we can pass it out. Because if it's changed again, it's dead.
Yes.
We're not going to have enough time to send it back to the Senate.
Okay. So we're looking for that to come out of the House this week. That would send it to the governor's desk if it comes out of the House unchanged.
Yeah. Right.
Don't wear out.
Convention of the States is in serious trouble, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm a little frustrated, and I have to take a lot of the responsibility for why it didn't move any sooner than it did. When it passed out of the General Laws Committee, it went to the Rules, and somehow they determined, this was not actually the Rules themselves, but some attorneys apparently determined that it needed to have a title. And so I talked to the clerk about that, and they convinced me that, yes, because of this particular nature of it, it's urging the Congress to do something specifically, and it carries the force of law, according to them, which I bluffed them on that and argued back and forth for a while, but finally they said, well, that's the way it's going to be. So they sent it back to the General Laws Committee, and here's where I stubbed a toe. It sat there for a while, and I talked to the chairman, Caleb Jones, and he said he'd get it voted out, and which they did this past Tuesday. I sat on the vote and passed out easily. And then I took a look at it, and it had a title, which it needed, but it also had what's called a presenting clause. At the end, it says that it has to be presented to the governor for his signature. And I thought,
No.
That's not a good deal. And the governor, of course, would veto that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So I went back to the clerk and I asked him why, and they said, well, it shouldn't. It needed a title, but it didn't need a presenting clause. There's apparently a case called the Weinstock case that required any of these House resolutions to have a title, and most of them have to have a presenting clause that goes to the governor. But an HCR, and this type in particular with an application to Congress is unique, and it doesn't have to have that. Some would argue that it doesn't even have to have a title, but because of the Weinstock case that said that they do have to be titled and presenting clause, the attorneys, even though they were instructed only at a title, they added both the title and the presenting clause. And so therein lies another predicament. So I told them, let's don't send it back to the committee because I'll just file an amendment and strip out that presenting clause when it gets to the floor. And then as I began to think about it, I did ask them if it could be amended on the floor originally, and they told me no. And I believe that I could have done that anyway. We could have already been over to the Senate. So I take responsibility, learned a valuable lesson, and I know that I need to make sure that every step that is taken, I need to make sure if there was a change, what the change was, and just hand carry it all the way through. So I apologize for that.
Oh no! And please tell me I'm going to go. I've got two more items on the list, but you tell me when you need to go. I don't want you to miss your son's run.
Yeah, I'm still fine.
Okay. Anti-Common Core. How's that? How's that going? I know that is that on the governor's desk?
You know, I don't have the answer to that. I know that that it moved out of the House. I'm disappointed, really, on how it was amended. I think it took most of the wind out of the sails. The one thing I guess I do agree with, though, is the committee that is established, and if they work effectively, they can, in essence, have Missourians establishing curriculum standards and writing a curriculum as well. And I think that's the way it should have been in the first place. When Common Core came about, if that's the way it would have worked, we probably wouldn't have had the problems we're having. So it may be the right step. I just don't think it's a large enough step, but that's what it is. And hopefully the governor will sign that, because I believe that it satisfied even those who were for Common Core. And that's what troubles me, because when you're pleasing them, they've got to know something that they're not revealing, and that it's not going to change a whole lot.
Absolutely. And the last item on my list is, do you have any news for the listeners about how things are going down there in Miller?
I do have just a snippet. After talking with the DNR, they told me they want to use Miller as their test case with regard to their wastewater treatment facility upgrade. And so they have met with the officials at Miller and got some preliminary things going. It's going to take a while before it's all done, but what we're looking for is what's called a multi-discharge variance, which will appeal to the EPA to allow some 300 cities in Missouri, Miller being one of them, for a variance on the ammonia standards, which Miller is just a smidgen above out of spec anyway, 1.84 when the standard is 1.8 parts per million. And so right now I feel pretty confident about it, but it's something that we can't, like I lost sight of the bill, I can't lose sight of what's happening there either, because once you turn your head, then a decision might be made that it's not what you wanted, and they have the freedom to do it. And that, Dave, is exactly why I filed a bill. I don't remember the number right offhand. I think it's 2256, something around there. And it has to do with with federal regulations, not just the DNR working on behalf of the EPA, but any federal regulation that's passed down to the state after 2014, if it were to be passed, and I don't think it will be because it has not even gotten a hearing, it would require approval by the state legislature or the entire General Assembly. And the real neat thing about that is it will allow the committee that's established to go back and start peeling off regulations that are currently in force that we don't want to comply with. And why should not Missouri and the General Assembly be able to oversee the Department of Natural Resources and say, you're working for us, and this is what we want you to do? I think it just makes perfect sense. The way it is now, they get money from the feds, and they do just about whatever they want to do. And if you don't comply, then you're subject to fines and other penalties.
Absolutely. And we might have you back once in a while over the summer or as often as you want to come. I'll be glad to host you every Friday night all summer long if you want. But but we'll be getting back now once we're done talking every night about what's going on in the legislature, and more hectically as the legislative session comes to a close. But we'll go back in the summer to talking about some of these more general things that you just brought up, like what our title is here, state sovereignty, and how we get it, and what it means for a state to be sovereign unto itself. Oh man, that is so important to taking this thing back. I mean, it's, you know, Mike, I don't know how much of a national political follower you are, but I think it absolutely emphasizes my point that until we regain state sovereignty, all is lost. When you look at these national primaries that happened just this last week, I mean, the quote-unquote Tea Party got trounced in every one. This is one of the things that I think is great about the Convention of the States, even if God forbid, that a single amendment comes out. I think it's time for states to say enough. It has got to be done.
Dave, if you can hear me, you started cutting out, and I hear you no longer.
Oh, are you? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we got some cheering. Something there at the end of that thing was coming to an end. But you know, as I was saying that if you were following, and I know you've had a very, very busy week, the politics nationally, you know, these state primaries that just happened, it's just more and more evident, and an emphasis of my point, I believe, that we are not going to fix things at a national level. You look at all these incumbent establishment Republicans who are going to who even once they win the Senate aren't going to get rid of Obamacare, who are winning primary elections state after state after state. The Tea Party taking a trouncing in these federal level elections emphasizes to me the point that our focus needs to be taking back our states and preparing our states to demand their sovereignty through a convention of the states.
Yeah, I think that's a point well taken. And I used to think that the answers were on the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
I was misguided, certainly. And I believe that the states do have an opportunity to claim state sovereignty, but we're a long way from that, too. And unfortunately, there's just not a people in the legislature who are willing to take a stand against the federal government.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I hate to be the guy who says, I'm glad something bad happened to you, but I really am. I'm glad as hell that you didn't beat Billy Long, because I think you're where you belong and where we need you right now. You want to talk about bashing your head into a wall, a guy with your integrity, a guy with your ideology up there dealing with that can of worms. I mean, I know you'd have a Ted Cruz and a Rand Paul on your side once in a while, but my gosh, Mike, that's a nut house up there.
Yeah, and this is certainly frustrating, too. I didn't imagine it would be this much of a struggle. But, you know, at the end of the session, I really didn't know enough about it, and I didn't have any dogs in the fight. So I don't think I made any enemies, but I think I made a few this time around, and that's unfortunate. I didn't intentionally do that, but it's just the principled stand that you take. And if you're not willing to stand strong on something, then what good are you? And the mention that people make when they say, well, you're doing the right thing, but I can't be a part of it. Boy, it just makes no sense to me at all.
If you're doing the right thing, but I can't be a part of it, that's the same as me saying I'm doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I don't know exactly how to fat, really. What I want to do is post all their names on a board. But, you know, I certainly can't do that, because there's enough of them that they could wipe me out in a heartbeat.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Some of them appear to be good folks, and that's the part that's so it just doesn't make any sense. I just don't understand how they can say one thing and not take an action that I think is appropriate.
Right. Okay, I don't want to leave tonight without giving you a chance. Well, I don't want to leave tonight without asking you one more question. Tell us about this primary challenge. I mean, that's pretty serious for a guy who is as conservative, who is as ideologically conservative and honest as you. It's shocking that you would have a primary challenge. So tell us about that.
You know, Dave, I don't think that I can substantiate any of this. And can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, yeah.
Okay, good. I don't think I can substantiate any of it, but since Don Rosiska took the appointment by the governor back in 2012 to be a part of the probation and parole board, after my filing of the articles of impeachment against the governor, there is suspicion that he has orchestrated this race. And I don't know that I can say that for sure. It does seem plausible. but I really can't be too concerned with it, because if I get caught up in trying to prove or disprove something, then I'll be wasting my time and I'll probably lose a race.
Right.
So what my intent is just to run as hard as I can on really the same platform I ran last time: smaller government, lower taxes, less regulation, and then show the people what I've been doing.
Yes.
And I think the record will speak for itself this time. And if that's not good enough and I'm not reelected, then I'm okay. But I believe that we have a good foundation to run on, and I'm looking for success. But we can't take anything for granted, so we'll just run hard, and come August 5th, we'll run right through it, and August 6th, hopefully we'll have the numbers on our side, and we'll continue on and then start planning really heavy for the next session, because I've learned that you don't just go in January and try to get your bills passed and your ideas pushed forward. It's a year-long battle. And hopefully we'll be able to gather some people with us and convince some of the other legislators that it's the right thing to do. And maybe we can turn that whole body around someday.
Absolutely. That's my mission every Thursday and Friday, or every Friday and Saturday night, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night for the next 3 weeks. My mission here is to present the case to the people that this is where we need to be. This is where we need to be, in our state house and even specifically in the House of Representatives. Because it's the one that's the most important to us, it's the one that we should be grabbing back hold of, and it's one that we can win. It is a battle we can win if we want to badly enough. Mike, I don't want to let you go without giving you as much time as you want to get into something we haven't covered, or to go over something to reinforce something we have covered. That's fine, too.
Okay. Well, we still haven't fired our last shot on the articles. I've been thinking about another move, perhaps, and I don't know if whether or not it will be successful, but it's going to come just short of calling people out, but trying to get them to realize that we cannot allow something as important as calling the governor to stand true to his responsibility and then try him if necessary, if sufficient evidence is presented that that calls for a trial. And that's something I think I'll push forward early next week, but it's going to have to be done quickly, and if we don't get any movement on it, then we'll just call it a defeat and have to live with it. One of the other things, though, that's going on in the county on June 5th, we're planning a meet and greet in Mount Vernon at the Mark, and that's just north of 44 on what they call the Loop, a 39 Loop, and I'll have more information on that on Facebook and other areas when that comes a little closer. But if you're in the area and want to come out, there's no charge. If you'd like to meet me, ask me questions, I'd be happy to greet you and answer your questions if you have them. And then a similar event on the June 12th in Aurora. And there's a park in Aurora, Baldwin Park, that we'll be meeting at. And there's a good man that I've come to know who lives in Aurora, and his name is Jerry Sumners. And he is hosting the event for us, and I really appreciate him doing that. It's neat when you have people who believe in you and don't just talk it, but actually – walk it too. And you know, that's thrilling when you have somebody who will do that for you. And so I'm inviting anyone who wants to come out. If you think you might want to come, though, if you'll just call me at 417-818-5419 and just give me an RSVP for either the 5th or the 12th, and those are both Thursday nights, we'll probably run from about 5:30 to 7 or 7:30. Love to have you come out. We'll probably have some hamburgers and hot dogs. So come on out and enjoy yourself.
Okay, and tell the listeners one more time, in case they don't remember, when the primary is.
Yeah, that's a good, important question. August 5th will be a statewide primary, and I'm in Lawrence County, the 157th Legislative District, So if you know anybody who lives in, especially the towns of Mount Vernon, Aurora, Verona, Miller, and Marionville areas, contact them. And if you don't know enough about me to ask them to support me, ask them to give me a call or send me an email at mikemoon4missouri@gmail.com, and I'd certainly like to correspond with them. And again, the phone number is 417-818-5419.
Okay, folks, that's Mike Moon, representative in Jefferson City for the Lawrence County region. If he is your guy, then you've got a winner. That primary is on August 5th. We'll be talking to him, we hope, again next Friday. Those are two Thursday night events that we'll be reminding you of here. Thank you very much, Mike. We're going to be doing what we can to help you out. Folks, we'll talk about that after the break. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it, as always. Thanks for taking the time out. Good luck to the boy in the track meet, and all the best to you.
Well, you're certainly welcome, and I certainly appreciate your support and encouragement and allowing me to be on any Friday night that I'm available. So thank you
again.
God
bless you, Mike. Good night.
You too. Thank you, sir.
That, folks, was the real deal. Mike Moon, sponsor, by the way, of the Anti-Common Core Bill, sponsor, by the way, of the Convention of States Amendment, sponsor, by the way, of H.R. 476. You're going to see guy after guy after guy after woman after woman after woman up there in Jefferson City sponsoring bills about making jumping jacks the exercise of Missouri and all kinds of things that are what our friend Lisa Payne Nager calls Yankee Doodle legislation. Slap the vet on the back, slap the doctor on the back, slap the nurse on the back, slap the teacher on the back. Happy Groundhog's Mother's Day. This guy sponsors legislation that is imperative. Keith Carmichael indicated he may call in. We haven't heard from him yet, and we'll get a little bit more into this Convention of the States if he does. If he doesn't, we'll come back and we'll talk about the big effort we have coming up beginning next week. But right now, my throat's dry, and we're going to take a break.
Never invested as much in public education as we should have because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the household, then we start making better investments.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Okay, we're back now. We had a little technical difficulty there. Our thanks again to Mike Moon. I want to start this segment by getting in a plug real quick, and I want to let you folks know that the studio line is now open. I had it very throttled down while we had Mike Moon here because his time was limited. I had a lot of stuff I wanted to cover, but it's open 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Give a call, weigh in. I want to get in a plug for Freedom Talks. That's going to happen again tomorrow for you folks out in the St. Peter's area at the Family Vision Library. Tomorrow is Freedom Talks. Lemke, Kurtman, Sloan, the dynamic trio. I went to Freedom Talks, a skeptic. When the meeting started, I was a skeptic. I said, okay, I've come to a Republican rally. And I came away 2.5 hours later an absolute convert. We did a couple of hours on it that night here on the radio, not giving away the secrets of the meeting, but talking about it, about how important it was, about how important I think it is that you go to this thing. And I've had recent discussions with my buddy Lloyd Sloan. And I believe that it's, without having gone to any more after the inaugural session here in Springfield, I'm hearing that it's getting better and better and better as it ripens. So please go out to Freedom Talks tomorrow if you're anywhere in the St. Peter's area at the Family Vision Library. Catch Lemke, Kurtman, Sloan, and then give us a call tomorrow night. Let us know what you think of it. I liked it. I liked it. I don't think you could go wrong spending a couple hours of your Saturday afternoon dealing with topics like the function of government, the Constitution, the private sector economy, free trade, and the sovereignty of the states. Okay, here we go. It is time, brothers and sisters, for us to seriously, and I mean seriously, send a message. Three years ago now, almost to the day, coming close to the day, a couple of people and I, as the Kane for Missouri campaign was wrapping up, got together and said to ourselves, this is it. You know, we are never, ever, ever going to fix this problem at the federal level. I believe that the Romney thing reinforced that. I believe that the current legislature in Washington, D.C., the Boehners and the McConnells, reinforced that. I believe that last Tuesday's primaries reinforced that. We're going to get this done. But if we're going to get this done, we're going to get it done state by state. And our focus, our function, our mission is to save this state so it can be part of the larger cooperative that says, finally, this Constitution belongs to us, Washington, D.C. It does not now, nor has it ever, nor will it ever belong to you. To do that, we have to regain our state's sovereignty. And to do that, we have to fix our state. I think nothing speaks more loudly to needing to fix our state than the epic fail of H.R. 476. The article of impeachment against a sitting governor for intentionally and maliciously disenfranchising over 250,000 citizens. For maliciously and intentionally declaring that 280,000 sovereign Missouri citizens are not entitled to, and that he has the power to deny them representation at the seat of power. Now, his accomplice in this is Stanley Cox. His accomplice in this is Republican Stanley Cox, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. You heard the story. You've read it in the papers. Stanley Cox single-handedly refused to let the committee vote H.R. 476 out to the floor. That is, should the governor be impeached? What is your opinion? It doesn't matter. What is your representative's opinion? It doesn't matter. What is the opinion of the representatives up there speaking for the people of the rest of the state of Missouri? It doesn't matter. Stanley Cox says your opinion doesn't matter. He will not even let the bill go out of the committee and to the House. So your representative, the person who represents you in Washington, D.C., if you're fortunate enough to even have a chair filled there, can speak to the issue. Further, in what is either the epic pinnacle of arrogance or is a way to protect the rest of the committee members from having to say that your representative doesn't have the right to voice an opinion on this, he made a single-handed decision to not even vote on it in the committee. He decided solely and by himself. Now, I haven't seen any furor. I haven't seen any public press from Elmer, Carnejo, Haar, Higdon, Lira, Marshall, or Richardson saying, that ain't right. That's not the way this thing would have gone. We didn't even get consulted. Nobody talked to us about how we would have voted if it had come up. I don't see any indignation from them saying we didn't get our say. So it's entirely likely that Cox was not lying when he said, oh, the majority were not in favor of this. It would be nice to hear from Elmer, Carnejo, Haar, Higdon, Lira, Marshall, or Richardson as to where they stand. But Stanley Cox making the call by himself is unacceptable. Here's the message you need to send. Stanley Cox, we reject you. We reject your politics. We reject your lack of integrity. Stanley Cox is leaving the House of Representatives to run for, if you can imagine after this, a judgeship. Stanley Cox, with a lack of integrity such that he is willing to, for his own political future, allow the governor of this state to disenfranchise 280,000 people, to leave 280,000 people dangling without representation. Stanley Cox, the guy who's willing to say, that's okay, Jay. That's okay, Jay, baby. We won't mess with you for that. Is seeking a position where he sits in judgment of people's lives. Associate Circuit Judge. Just say no. I don't care if you live in Pettis County or not. I don't care if you live in the farthest reaches of the state of Missouri right now. This guy works for you. He demanded single-handed authority to say no to the single most important piece of legislation in this legislative session. The disenfranchisement of 280,000 sovereign Missouri citizens Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of next week, and Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of the week after that. We are going to dedicate an entire 2 hours from 7 to 9. We'll have the phone lines open. We'll have ample call handlers here. We're dedicating 12 hours to asking you all over Missouri to pledge to send $10 to the opponent in Pettis County of Stanley Cox. The million-dollar message, Stanley Cox, we reject you. Now, listen, I'm not a PAC. I'm not handling this money. I'm not asking you to send any money to me, to the Hour of Truth, to Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I'm asking you on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of next week, and Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of the week after, to call in and say, yes, I will go online, I will send $10, or yes, I will put $10 in an envelope to tell Stanley Cox, we reject you. Here's our million-dollar message, Stanley Cox. Here's our million-dollar message, you Republicans, you conservatives in Jefferson City, who would snub your noses at the people of Missouri? Here's the million-dollar message, you folks who don't care what the Missouri Constitution says. Here's your million-dollar message, and we'll do it again. And then the same night, I'm going to ask you to do it again. I'm going to ask you to take another $10 for a total of $20 and send it to Mike Moon, the guy you just heard from. Because he backed the Convention of the States, because he originated H.R. 476, because he pushed so hard on both those things this session, he has had mounted against him I'm not even going to call this an establishment Republican. I'm going to call this an undocumented Democrat. In a primary, a person with name recognition, the wife of the guy he replaced. Remember his story? Mike Moon went up mid-session last term, mid-session last year, in a special election because the seat in his district had been vacated when Rizika accepted an appointment from the Democratic governor, a Republican, accepted an appointment from a Democratic governor to go to the parole board, accepted an appointment from the Democratic governor that he knew would weaken the conservative stronghold in the House of Representatives, accepted an appointment from the Democratic governor, weakened the majority in the House of Representatives, and now is back to try to unseat Mike Moon because of H.R. 476, because of the Convention of the States, because Mike Moon stands for you and me. Rizika is back. His wife is running, but get this. Does that mean Rizika is behind it? Well, so far that campaign has collected $1,000 of declarable money in a loan from ex-Representative Rizika. We'll be asking you to take another $10 for a total of a $20 investment and make your $10 part of the million-dollar message to the establishment Republicans. Now, I hear from my Republican friends daily, don't give up on the Republicans. All we need to do is save the Republican Party. We don't need a third party. All we need to do is get this thing straightened out. Here's your chance. Here is your chance to send, at the state level where it matters, a million-dollar message to conservative Republicans. $10 to keep Mike Moon and $10 to reject Stanley Cox. $20. The phone lines will be open next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and the following Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Will you come along? Will you be part of the million-dollar message? Is it really about saving the Republican Party, or is it just about making enough noise on Facebook to get your name out there?
not how I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
All right. Yeah, Keith, when I talked to him earlier today, kind of as a spur-of-the-moment thing, wasn't sure he was going to be able to get along tonight at all. We'll try to get him on here tomorrow night, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Convention of the States. I really did want to spend the majority of my time with Mike tonight on this 476. I am incensed. I am so – there is such a bad taste in my mouth. Over this 476 thing and the way it was handled. I'm telling you, it is from the top down. The stink in this barrel of apples goes from the top down. This thing was introduced the first week of the session. It didn't find its way to a committee until Jones was pretty sure it was late enough to not go anywhere. And when the pressure started mounting from you folks, he wouldn't even have assigned it to a committee at all. When the pressure finally started mounting from you folks, he did assign it to the Judiciary Committee, where he knew he had the chairman in his pocket. When it got assigned to the committee, it sat there and sat there and sat there. And were it not for pressure from you folks, it would not have even ever had a hearing in the committee. Finally, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks before the end of the legislative session, after you pressured it up, they had a kind of quasi-hearing over two different weeks lunch recess. And then, finally, having to say, well, okay, our attempts to stall it and never send it to committee didn't work. Okay, well, our attempts to let it die in committee didn't work. Cox had to stand up and say, okay, I am not going to let this thing happen. I am not going to let my buddy Jay, you know, because I'm going to be a judge in Sedalia where Jay comes for a pancake breakfast once a year. So I don't want to mess with that too much, you know. I might be willing to take a stand on a rodeo clown. You know, I might be able to take a stand on some of this important stuff like the rodeo clown. But I can't take a stand on disenfranchising 280,000 people. That's a little bit too hard for me. I don't have the stomach for that. And now they have the gall to mount an establishment Republican primary against Mike Moon over this thing. This thing stinks from the top down. I am telling you right now. So next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, you and me and 100,000 other people are going to send a $1 million message to Stanley Cox. We hope that message resonates to Tim Jones. We hope that message resonates to next year's majority leader, to next year's speaker. We hope that message resonates all the way to Governor Jay Nixon. We are done with you. And we're going to send next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and the Thursday and Friday and Saturday after that, another million-dollar message to those who would stand with us. Join us tomorrow night. We'll try to get Keith Carmichael on. If not, we'll have plenty to talk about. Join us next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday following that, as we send from the heartland a million-dollar message.
There are so many contradictions. All these messages we send, keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, even if you're